Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower, and it is Monday morning, and that means it's time for the box office and movie reviews. Eric Childress and Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com join me every Monday morning to talk about the movies, and that's what we're going to do. Take a look at the box office for the weekend and review the new films. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. You can also send your text to 312-981-7200. And you can check us out at Twitter and Facebook.com/Nick D Show. That's the best way to stay connected with us. Eric Childress, Colin Suter, join us for the movie reviews in the box office. And we welcome Eric to the show. Hello, Eric.
Hey, man.
And Colin. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Good.
All right, man. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
This is going to be fun.
All right. Don't build it up too much.
Yeah. So let's talk about the box office first. Eric, you do a box office report every week, and you write about some of the stuff that's happening and all that cool stuff. And the big winner of the week is the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water.
Yeah. Who knew that had SpongeBob still had it in him?
Man,
really.
$56 million. And now, how long has it been since the first SpongeBob movie? It's been like 7 years, right?
11.
11?
2004.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah.
Holy cow. Because I remember going to see it. I saw it with my ex, Heather. We went to the Logan to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I happen to be a SpongeBob fan. I didn't see this new one, though.
Okay.
I didn't see this one. But I think SpongeBob is very funny. And I remember one of my favorite things, though, I can't believe it was 11 years ago. That's so crazy. Was we called the Logan. Remember when you called theaters to get movie times? Remember those days? So we called the theater to find out what the showtime was. And the people who used to run the Logan were a couple of these very sort of shady, like, guys with unidentifiable accents at that time, 11 years ago or whenever it was, when it was in that transition before it became, like, the hipster place that it is now. And they would do the phone recording where you would call up and get the showtimes. And the guy said when I called up for the theater, he's like, theater number two, SpongeBob has a square pants. And I still remember that to this day. And I called it SpongeBob has a square pants. And I was like, well, we have to call this back. Heather, you got to hear this. And so we called it back. And SpongeBob has a square pants. And she laughed her ass off. And we ended up like calling it like six times and recording it because it was so funny. But I enjoyed the first SpongeBob movie. I thought the first one was pretty funny.
Yeah, I was not. I haven't really been into SpongeBob,
yeah.
So I can't really, say that I was a fan of the first movie. Looking at the numbers for that original movie compared to this one, I mean, the original opened to $31 million, and it ended up only doing $85 million. Because if you remember, 2004 opened in the holiday of November that year, and there was a period, it opened right in the wake of both The Incredibles and The Polar Express.
Oh, boy.
So both of those films, the word of mouth in those films were kind of through the roof, and SpongeBob ended up, while it opened well, just kind of ended up, just sort of playing itself out. But now, that's why, $56 million for this one really kind of shocked me.
I did not expect that kind of number.
Yeah.
For this movie at all, and I do find it kind of funny that it took SpongeBob to take down the American Sniper.
Yeah,
I find that pretty interesting.
Chris Kyle would have killed the people that said SpongeBob has a square pants.
Yeah, SpongeBob has a square pants.
Yeah.
So the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water, $56.0 million. Man, that's a lot of money. Number two, still raking it in, man. American
yeah.
Sniper with $24.1 million, bringing its total up to $282 million.
Yeah,
man, oh man, that is really unbelievable.
Crazy.
So you're talking about? I'm looking at this now. It says 11 years since SpongeBob graced the silver screen, let's see, the Incredibles, Polar Express, and then he has at a first week February opener, it looks even better. The Lego Movie came out. The Lego Movie came out a year ago.
Yeah.
That's hard to believe. I don't know why. But and it opened to $69 million. SpongeBob movie, this one comes in second with $56 million. Scream 3 made $34.7 million on its opening weekend, which is pretty impressive. Hannah Montana, Miley Cyrus, Best of Both Worlds concert tour. God.
It's a big February movie. We'll talk about that one a lot.
$31.1 million. Dear John, with God, that movie it opened to $30 million.
Yeah.
Oh, right, man.
The weekend before before Valentine's Day. So.
Wow. He's Just Not That Into You, $27.7 million. Again, because of the time when it's released. Yeah. Barbershop 2, Back in Business, $24.2 million. How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. I guess this is the time to release the rom-coms or the romantic movies, right?
Well, it seems, yeah. I mean, like, usually the week, you know, I mean, you got 50 Shades of Grey coming up next week, so that's going to, you know, that's, you know,
that thing is going to make that thing is going to make a ton of money, don't you think, Eric? What are you projecting?
Oh, I think it's going to be over 60.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
might be even higher than that. I mean, I think I have to look it up. I think Sex and the City did, I don't know, like 85, I think.
Jeez.
That was in May, so I could see this thing opening to over 70 even.
I wouldn't be surprised by that at all.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. So 23.7 for How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. And then you've got Chronicle, which made $22 million. Boy, that opened strong.
Yeah.
That was so. Was that just like good advertising or smart?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think the intrigue of that one, and it was just, you know, again, they're sort of the right time. There was nothing else out at the time.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that's contributed to that.
Because there was certainly no names in that movie.
Oh no, not. I mean, still aren't really.
Yeah.
few people know who Chris DeHaan is now because of that movie, and he's been in a lot of stuff since.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, they're supposed to be doing. Although the guy who did Chronicle is doing the Fantastic
Four. He's got the Fantastic Four. Yeah, that's his. Yeah. And then the Monuments Men with $22 million, and then that tanked though, didn't it?
Overall, it tanked. I mean, it did over $70 million here in the States, but with the budget, and it did okay overseas too. But it ended up being a loser for Clooney.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they made fun of it at the Golden Globes.
They did.
They mocked it openly at the Golden Globes.
Yes.
So coming in at third on this week's list is Jupiter Ascending, $19 million. The Wachowskis are on a skid, aren't they?
That's polite, I would say. I mean, this is the third movie they've done since the Matrix trilogy ended, and it's the third loser.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of, I'm kind of shocked that after Speed Racer and Cloud Atlas, which neither did well, you know, budget comparative, that they would give even more money to the Wachowskis for Jupiter Ascending.
What's the budget for Jupiter Ascending?
$175 million.
Oh man,
that's just production. So you're probably talking to probably around maybe $225 million with advertising and prints and stuff.
Well, I mean, we knew it was in trouble when they pushed it back, right?
Yeah.
When was it? It was scheduled to come out. Was it last summer?
Last July.
Yeah.
Right in the wake of Dawn of the Apes.
Mm-hmm.
So
they said, "Yeah, no, we're gonna wait."
Yeah. They were kind of hoping to pull off what they did last year with the 300 sequel, because the previous year was supposed to come out in the summer, and they ended up pushing it back to the following March, and they ended up making a small profit on that one. Not going to be the case with this one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a disaster. You can't $175 million just for budget alone, and it grosses 19.
Yeah, that means it's probably not going to gross. I think when word of mouth hits, we'll talk about this in a bit, it might not hit 50 here in the States.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then another disaster coming in fourth this week, Seventh Son with $7.1 million. Now, what'd they spend on this?
$95 million. And that thing was supposed to come out 2 years ago.
Oh, so, seriously? It's been sitting on the shelf that long?
Yeah. It was actually, production was completed in 2012. And it was supposed to open in February of 2013.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But the thing is, that movie at least has made like $85 million overseas so far. I don't know how, but it has.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So the Universal opened that thing a couple weeks ago, I guess, and you know, so that's pulled in at least a decent chunk of change over there. So it's, you know, it's not, you know, not doing great, but that is going to cushion the blow a little bit.
Wow. And it, I would like to point out that that's the first movie that Jeff Bridges and Julianne Moore have been in together since Big Lebowski.
Of course,
I'd like to point that out.
I like to think it's an extension of the Big Lebowski. It's one of those dream sequences.
Yeah. Well, I think Jeff Bridges might have been high.
Might have been high since Big Lebowski.
Yeah, might have been high when he signed on to do Seven Son. All right, well, hang on, you guys. We'll go down the rest of the box office here, and then we'll come back and we'll review all the new movies and talk more. Eric Childress, Colin Suter with me, and we're reviewing all the new movies as we do every Monday morning. Quick break here on 720 WGN. All right. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. on 720 WGN. Steve Cochran show begins at 5. It's a Monday morning, and that means we review the new movies. Eric Childress, Colin Suter. We also take some time and look at the box office for the weekend as well. So we welcome back Eric and Colin. Welcome back, guys.
Hello.
All right. So we left off with Seven Son, which came in fourth this week with $7.1 million. Number five is Paddington, which is at $5.3 million. Number six is Project Almanac, which is at $5.3 million. Now, that movie must have cost like $2 to make, right?
Which one was that?
Project Almanac.
Yeah, I think it was like $12 million, I think.
Okay, so it's made 15.7 in 2 weeks. So
yeah.
Number seven is The Imitation Game with $4.8 million. And number eight is The Wedding Ringer, $4.8 million, bringing its total up to $55 million. Now, considering Kevin Hart's movies make more than that. Is The Wedding Ringer considered a disappointment?
Maybe a slight one. I mean, it's, you know, Ride Along had, you know, also an Ice Cube contingent to it. So,
sure.
And I think that, again, that was sort of open in the right time in January and also didn't have the competition with, like, you know, an American Sniper and stuff like that.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't, you know, maybe a little bit, you know, but I don't know. I mean, Think Like a Man 2 didn't exactly do fantastic business either.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the only movie he's had since Ride Along?
He had a concert film.
What did he have, Colin?
He had a concert film.
Oh,
was that last year?
Yeah.
Last summer?
Not this last summer, but the summer before last.
Summer before, okay. Yeah, that certainly did very well for a concert film.
Yeah, Colin, you ended up reviewing that one for us.
Yeah. Not that great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Wedding Ringer comes in at number eight. Number nine is Black or White, $4.5 million. Boy, Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
When was the last time Kevin Costner had a hit?
Ooh, I can look that up.
I mean, it's not Draft Day. It certainly wasn't Draft Day. That wasn't.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't anything he released last year.
Yeah. And then number 10, The Boy Next Door, $4.1 million, bringing its total up to $30.8 million. So that's your box office. The big winner, though, SpongeBob. SpongeBob has square pants, and it's $56 million. All right, cool. All right, well, we have two crazy special effects sci-fi movies that came out, and both did not do well this weekend. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, let's see, Colin. Why don't you tell us about Seventh Son?
Okay.
Good luck, Colin.
Good luck.
Yeah. Jeff Bridges plays Master Gregory. right there, you're in trouble. And he's also known as a spook. That's the name of his job or the name of his occupation.
How far removed is that from a giver?
Yeah.
Performance-wise, not much.
Okay. Anyway, so he is a warrior who can fight off evil spirits. And he's also the seventh son of the seventh son, and for some reason that means something, and I forgot why. he's had a lot of apprentices, one after another, and they all die in battle against trolls and witches and ogres and anything else nasty you can think of. But, you know, Master Gregory is getting old and crotchety and needs someone to look after everybody, especially now that an evil witch played by Julianne Moore has escaped from an underground prison that he put her in a long, long time ago. Basically, much of The Seventh Son is about the training of this young apprentice played by Ben Burns. And he has to take his tests and find the courage within himself, et cetera, basically one action set piece after another. And, you know, while Jeff Bridges makes discouraging comments about everything. Make fun of Jeff Bridges a little bit during the box office, saying he may have been a little high when he signed on for this, and I'm pretty sure he was high during the filming of it. Going back to Lebowski, it seems like he's doing like some, I don't know what he's doing in this film. It seems like he's maybe Sam Elliott with marbles in his mouth, with a touch of Yosemite Sam or something. I don't know what he's doing, but it is the weirdest acting choice I've seen in a while. It's actually kind of to the point of embarrassing. I mean, Jeff Bridges has been, you know, kind of been in self-parody mode for a while. I mean, you saw that Super Bowl commercial. Maybe it's self-parody. I don't know, but it's gotten to the point where I just kind of watch and went, okay, Jeff Bridges has officially gone bye-bye from us. If this is, you know, what he's, the kind of performance he's turning in and the kind of movie he's saying yes to. He might be in Nicolas Cage mode right now. Just sad. Julianne Moore, I mean, the same could be said for her for signing on to do this and giving the kind of performance that she's giving. This should have went to Sharon Stone or somebody of that ilk, but not of the caliber of Julianne Moore. I can understand her wanting to play kind of a, you know, a vamp kind of character, you know, in this kind of film that might be appealing to her just as a change of pace, but this is not the film to do that with. I mean, this is pretty derivative stuff. I'm sure when, you know, the guys who write this movie, you know, went in, they pitched it as, oh, it's like Game of Thrones. And, you know, there's a reason why Game of Thrones is really popular, but it's not because, you know, America has an insatiable appetite for this sort of thing. There's other reasons why Game of Thrones is popular. This is just really just kind of a dumb movie about, you know, a sorcerer and his apprentice, and who cares? You know, it's not going to launch any franchises anytime soon. It's a pretty bad movie.
Okay. Eric?
Wow, I'm glad Colin remembered that much about the movie, because I sure didn't. yeah, I joked earlier that, you know, this film seems to be, or at least I hope, is something that happened, you know, within the head of the dude. And that's really all I could sort of get out of watching it.
I was hoping at some point Saddam Hussein would show up with bowling shoes.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like Sam Elliott shows up, you know, drinking sarsaparilla or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, I mean, Colin, I think, you know, kind of hit it on the head when you think about when this film was probably greenlit. It was right during the initial popularity of Game of Thrones.
Right.
Obviously, and, you know, to spend $95 million on a film like that, and again, Colin's absolutely right, is that there's a lot more going on to Game of Thrones than just the fantasy element. That's almost sort of a side note, you know, with the dragons and, you know, the magic and sorcery that goes on during that show. That's almost an afterthought compared to all the intrigue and the interesting characters. There's just sort of a random genericness about this film that, you know, the only thing you can sort of take away from it is just sort of wondering what, you know, actors of Bridges and Moore's caliber is doing in this movie. And again, Colin sort of took the words right out of my mouth that Bridges is sort of it's almost like he's doing a version of Nicolas Cage's career. You know, maybe that's the motivation he's doing right now. He's, you know, it's almost like a mocking sort of way. But he's doing, you know, he's not doing himself any favors. And I wish, you know, that, you know, a couple of some indie producers or something would give him some role. I mean, he's Jeff damn Bridges, for God's sakes. You know, get this guy some work. I'd love to see him start popping up at stuff at Sundance and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Instead of movies like this and The Giver and wasting his talents on just a lot of dreck. And there's just nothing in this movie to attach yourself to. The action is boring. The eye candy is just not there. The special effects are just meh. It's sort of just a waste of time, energy, money, talent, everything. There's nothing in this film to recommend.
Yeah. It's a terrible movie. And, you know, I mean, you guys know that Jeff Bridges is my favorite actor. You know
that.
I love him. I think he's great. I don't know what the hell he's doing in this. It was sort of fascinating and troublesome and awful to watch him in this movie. But I was like, every time he came on screen, I was like, what is he doing? What? You know? And, I don't know what the voice was. I don't know what the physical stuff was. I just don't know all the choices he made in this movie were just like troubling, you know? and it's just a stupid movie. And it reminded me a lot. Well, what the hell was that movie? It was the one with Nicolas Cage and the dude who wrote Goon, the kid who wrote Goon.
Oh, Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yeah. It was like that, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, that was set in modern times, obviously.
Right.
Yeah, that's not a bad comparison.
Yeah. And that was a terrible movie too. But I don't know what's going on here. Julianne Moore and. And you said this thing sat on the shelf for how long?
2 years.
Oh, man.
2 years.
All right. Well, I don't know what's coming up next for Bridges, but I agree with you. I mean, he needs to break out of this stuff that he's been doing lately.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not good, man. And this is Jeff Bridges we're talking about. I mean, this is, you know, I mean, he's the best actor. He's my favorite actor on the planet. And to watch him do this stuff. I mean, it wasn't even, you know, because like if you end up in a movie and you decide to go, you know, ultra quirky and weird with your choices. Sometimes that can be fun to watch. And when I went into this movie, because I had seen the commercials, obviously, and I saw, you know, the voice choices that Bridges was making when I saw the commercials, I was like, okay, this is going to be ridiculous. But I thought at least it might be amusing. It might be amusing to watch him do such a, you know, give such a ridiculous performance that it becomes, it's not the case, though. It's just not fun to watch. So sometimes you can get away with doing that kind of performance, and it's fun to watch, but not in this case. So, yeah, terrible movie. But nobody went to see it anyway, so it'll probably be out of the theater. This thing should have gone straight to video, don't you think? I mean, I know obviously they spent a lot of money on it, but...
I think if you didn't have the talent involved with it, it would have been one of those sort of straight-to-video releases that Universal's actually done a few of recently.
Now, haven't they done some really? I mean, they've released some really crappy movies in the early part of the year. Isn't Universal kind of known for? Didn't they release like Dracula Untold at this time?
No, that was surprising. That was like the last October.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, that wasn't too long ago. It's coming out in video now. You're seeing commercials for Dracula Untold now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Universal. I mean, they're not having a great year release wise. I mean, they got this. The Boy Next Door, which is an awful movie, and Black Hat, which sucks. yeah, and then they got 50 Shades of Grey next week.
Right, so I was going to say everything is going to be made up next week.
Right.
Yeah.
Profit wise.
Yeah. Profit wise. Exactly. All right, Eric, Colin, hang on, guys. We got more to talk about right here on 720 WGN. It's movie review time. Seventh Son is the one we just reviewed, and it's sad because Jeff Bridges is in it, and so is Julianne Moore, two of my favorite actor and actresses there. Terrible movie. All right, we got more to talk about right here on 720 WGN with the movie reviews. It's Nick DiGilio. Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower reviewing the new movies. Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com join me every Monday morning to take a look at the box office for the weekend and to review the new movies. So we welcome Eric and Colin back. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Now, we haven't seen the other movies, but let's talk a little bit. Let's mention them a little bit. What is Girlhood? What do we know about Girlhood?
I've heard a lot of good things about Girlhood. That's playing at the Film Center,
okay.
I believe. It's a tale of teenage African-Americans, girls, and their experience growing up. I've heard very good things about it.
Okay, so that's at the Film Center.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what about Red Army?
Red Army is it's a documentary about the Russian hockey team that the United States ended up beating in the Miracle on Ice.
Oh wow!
It's a documentary story from their perspective and the sort of the build up that they had to that match and the sort of the aftermath of it as well.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know anything about that. So I'm going to have to see that. I happen to like hockey. I happen to like hockey a little bit.
Yes, you do.
And then the SpongeBob SquarePants movie, The Sponge Out of Water, that was your big winner over the weekend. And then Winter Sleep. What is Winter Sleep?
That's
Colin
actually
Winter Sleep.
Sorry?
Well, that actually, you know what? I made a mistake. I did see this film. It's actually a re-release. Or, I mean, they're reissuing it. It played at Music Box already for a couple weeks back in December. And now Facets has it this week until Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
This is a what is this to be from? It's a drama. It's about 3.5 hours. It's a Turkish.
Whoa.
Yeah. it's about, you know, a guy who runs a small hotel in central Anatolia with his young wife, and he has kind of had a rocky relationship with him, or I'm sorry, with her, and his sister, and it's an interesting film. I mean, it's 3.5 hours, and it's a lot of dialogue. It's all dialogue, so you got to be ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an interesting just the relationships between all the characters. That's not, you know, a plot driven film. It's definitely character driven. It's an interesting film. That's about all I can say.
Okay.
About these characters who are kind of getting on this guy's case for his lack of character.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Winter Sleep. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Eric.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about Jupiter Ascending?
Okay.
Jupiter is ascending.
The Jupiter is ascending. well, this is the latest film from Andy and Lana Wachowski, the people who gave us not just the Matrix trilogy, but also Bound, Speed Racer, and Cloud Atlas, as we mentioned. The Jupiter of the title is not referring necessarily to the planet, but of the main character played by Mila Kunis, who is the hottest immigrant maid in Chicago. Every time she's scrubbing toilets in this movie, it looks like an ad from a magazine. Unbeknownst to her, is that she actually contains DNA that is comparable to a queen of the universe that has recently died. As she and we are about to find out, is that inhabitants of Earth have actually been placed here by members of alien royalty throughout the universe, for the express purpose of sort of harvesting ourselves for sort of the eternal youth of other members of the galaxy. So the descendants of this queen are now after Jupiter. They all want her because they all want to be obviously the next ruler of the universe. And with her as next in the bloodline, they can't do that. So they send some people after her here on Earth, and she is rescued by a half-man, half-wolf warrior creature played by Channing Tatum, who saves her and is going to continue to save her throughout the movie as these villainous children of the throne continue to chase after her and try to either marry her or befriend her or just outright wipe her out so they can lay claim to the throne of the universe. That's actually a lot harder to talk about than even Seventh Son. I do not throw around the word disaster that often. And if I have, if you go to the tape, and I have in the past, I have to, you have to forgive me, because that's precisely what this movie is, and with a capital D-I-S-A-S-T-E-R. This movie is the pasta on Oscar Madison's wall. yeah.
Now it's garbage.
There you go. Thank you for finishing that off. Watching this film the other night, sitting in a theater, a late night Thursday, and watching this thing unfold, 12 minutes in, I actually looked at my watch and had no clue what was going on in this movie. No clue what was happening. And when you're that removed from a movie that early, you really start to not care about anything that's going on. But I try to tough it out as best I can, watching these Channing Tatum swoop in there on gravity boots like he's from the cast of Solar Babies, just running around, dog fights over Chicago, blowing up Willis Tower and stuff. And all this stuff's going to be magically replaced because people are going to be hypnotized into not knowing that alien life is shooting laser beams all over Chicago and blowing stuff up. I have not been this embarrassed watching a film from this caliber of talent. People, you know, the Wachowskis, with the exception of Speed Racer, I have liked all of, the last Matrix movies I'm not crazy about, but I have not seen this level of disrespect that I've had for them since Speed Racer, obviously.
Yeah.
But I have not been this embarrassed for a filmmaker of any caliber since the Black Dahlia with Brian De Palma.
I'm
sorry, Nick.
All right. Well, listen, hold on. Eric, hang on a second because we got a break. Okay. All right. When we come back, you can finish up your thoughts, and then Colin and I will give us our thoughts on Jupiter Ascending. All right. It's Nick DiGilio, Movie Reviews on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Movie Reviews and Box Office. That's what we do every Monday morning. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me, and we are in the middle of hearing Eric's rave review of Jupiter. So did we just... I lost Eric. We got to get Eric back. Colin, he didn't seem to like it.
Not really.
No. While we're waiting to get a hold of Eric back, Colin, why don't you tell us what you thought of Jupiter Ascending?
Oh, man, I feel like I'm just interrupting midstream. Eric...
Well, we'll get him back, but let's hear what you have to say.
All right. Well, I do not think the movie is the disaster that Eric thinks it is. I think what the Wachowskis going for here is just a same thing George Lucas was going for with the original Star Wars, just kind of a throwback to the original serials of Saturday morning matinees. I think this is kind of them doing a big, overblown space opera. The acting is over the top. The lineage is hard to follow. A little sketchy. But it's all done with passion and a commitment. Is part of it is silly? Yeah, I think it is. But I think that's kind of part of its charm. The sight of Channing Tatum running around buildings, like Eric said, rightfully so, comparing it to Solar Babies. There's something about that appeals to the 8-year-old in me. I think the sensibility here is different than their other films. Like they're just, I don't think they're trying to, hit us over the head with a lot of, philosophy and the kind of stuff they did with Matrix and Cloud Atlas. And granted, those are superior films to this, but I think this is just them doing, a yarn, a good Saturday morning matinee space opera. So in that sense, I think they achieved their goals. Right? In that sense, I don't think this film is a disaster. Is it problematic? Absolutely. I think visually, I think the movie is pretty awesome. I don't think I was bored looking at this movie for a second. But it does overwhelm the story. The story does get lost in all of it. And, there wasn't really a moment when I was on the edge of my seat wondering what was going to happen next. So in that respect, as a movie going experience, it's not entirely satisfying, wanting to care about the characters in the story. It's kind of it's a movie like The Seventh Son. The story, we've pretty much seen it before, even though it's very convoluted and goofy and hard to describe. And you got three separate villains, who are all siblings or whatever, trying to get this girl to not get married or not get married. I don't know what was going on there, but so I don't know. I think the Wachowskis had they were going for something in tone and achieved it, and for that I like the film. But as far as, you know, telling a good story that, you know, keeps an audience captivated, I think that's kind of where they failed. So I think it's a mixed success. I don't think it's a disaster.
Okay. Now, Eric, you were saying that you thought this was an unmitigated disaster.
Yeah, as I was saying, it was a disaster. And as I was alluding to, is that it's the first film since, I'm sorry, Nick, Black Dahlia, that I actually considered walking out of.
Wow.
I had that feeling about 45 minutes into the movie where the movie wasn't not connecting with me. It was just sort of offending my sensibilities as someone who enjoys science fiction yarns such as that. I mean, this is, you know, story-wise or just idea-wise or visually, you know, that this is a film that should have connected with that, you know, that inner child that I keep with me, you know, throughout. I mean, for God's sakes, I was live tweeting Demolition Man over the weekend. So I'm not averse to over-the-top science fiction, you know, goofs. But this is a film that, I mean, just everything about it just sort of offended my movie-going sensibilities, from the characters that are just not drawn out at all. Mila Kunis's character is, frankly, quite offensive as far as I'm concerned, as a science fiction heroine who basically is just going to give up the universe at the sight of any, you know, guy she can make googly eyes at or who make googly eyes at her. I don't know what the hell Eddie Redmayne is doing in this movie. We can talk all we want about Jeff Bridges' choices in Seventh Son, but I would sooner watch Jeff Bridges mumble his way through Seventh Son than watch Eddie Redmayne mumble his way through this film. I mean, seriously, if he wins the Oscar, well, The Theory of Everything, he should immediately give it back. He should just, this is not a Cuba Gooding situation where years later we go, oh, maybe we should give it back. No, he was so great in Jerry Maguire. He has to give the Oscar back on stage if he wins and just apologize for this movie.
And I got to tell you, Eric, I think he's going to win.
He might.
I really do.
He might.
Do.
And I'm going to yell the screen, give it back.
Yeah.
Give it back. I mean, there's just nothing about this movie. I mean, this movie literally stops through halfway through for an intergalactic DMV sequence that maybe the Coen brothers or certainly Terry Gilliam would have pulled off. It's clearly sort of a almost like a Brazil type nod to Gilliam. And you know, the
By the way, not only does Terry Gilliam make a cameo in the film, but there is a Brazil joke in the film that only people who watch Brazil obsessively will get when they hear it.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So there's that. So clearly I was in tune to stuff that was going on in this movie. I sat there just mouth agape at just everything that was going on, yeah, you know, in front of my eyes, and I could not wait for the thing to end.
I loved it.
There you go.
I thought it was great. Everything that you're saying, everything that Colin's saying is absolutely legitimate, and I could totally understand why people would absolutely hate this movie. And yeah, my mouth was agape too, but I was having a blast. I mean, I was like, I don't know what the hell's going on, and yet I am enjoying the hell out of this. And I think it's, I mean, you know, like you said, Colin, it's devoid of a lot of the philosophical stuff that the Wachowskis are known for loading into their movies. This is just like, all right, it's leave your brain at the door and watch this beautifully visual. I mean, John Toll shot this movie. It's gorgeous, and the effects are great. And I just had a blast watching it. And again, and Eddie Redmayne is ridiculous in it. I totally agree with you. But for some reason, I was like giddy while I was watching this movie. Honest to God, for the entire running time, I was just like a giddy idiot. And which I think was kind of the point of the movie. You know, you could rip this movie apart, and Eric, you clearly did.
Yes.
I totally understand it. I don't agree, but I can totally understand why someone would have the reaction that you had to this movie. But I just thought it was, I just had a blast. I sat in the theater and I was giggling, and I believe everybody else in the theater hated it. that I saw it, and once again, I don't blame them, but I would just, like, when it was over, I was like, yeah, all right. that was a blast. It was ridiculous. It made absolutely no sense, but I had a really good time.
I'm glad people can at least understand where I'm coming from, because I certainly don't understand it on the other side. but I mean, I sat there watching this thing, and the only thing I kept thinking, I'm like, is that this is Battlefield Earth with better visual
effects. Oh, no, no, no.
Yeah, it's the level of Battlefield Earth. I'm sorry.
Wow,
I'm sticking to that.
Wow. Okay. Well, we totally completely disagree on this one.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I believe, Eric, you have the more your opinion is of the more of what most people would think.
Yeah. Yeah. I think most of us would rather watch Highlander 2: The Quickening than watch this movie again.
Oh man. All right. Well, what do we got next week?
We got the 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh God.
Next week. So, right. You know, bring your whips, bring your chains, bring your chips, your dip.
Yeah. I happen to be a really, really, really big fan of Dakota Johnson.
Why?
Because she was on that Ben and Kate sitcom, and I thought she was great on that.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm rooting for her. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, if you followed any sort of the press that's been leading up to this release, there's so many stories being written about how the two actors hate each other.
Yeah.
And kind of hate the movie that they're in.
Well, I just read something online tonight where Dakota Johnson is like embarrassed about the movie.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I mean, that's not, you know, I mean, it's not going to stop people from going.
No.
You know, but I really like her. And, you know, the thing about her is that because I think she was just great on this sitcom. And the sitcom was Nat Fox was on it too. They played brother and sister on it.
Right.
And it was a terrific show, and but of course it didn't last. But I thought she was great on it, and she is so. You can totally tell that she is the daughter of Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith.
Oh, without question.
I mean, it's just the way she acts, the way she talks, the way she looks. It's like she's like this perfect storm combination of those two people. And I don't know. I really like her, and I hope, you know, I mean, I'm sure she'll be fine.
Well, we'll see.
Nothing else is going to
be. We'll see.
I mean, they're not going to put anything else up against that movie next week, are they?
Not of anything of any consequence, I don't think. Something else is open.
What were you going to say, Colin?
The Kingsman, doesn't that open?
Does open.
Oh, okay. See, that looks cool.
Could be.
That looks cool.
Things.
That's the dude who directed Pound Cake, right?
Layer Cake.
And Kick Ass, right? Pound Cake.
I want to see Pound Cake.
Pound
now.
Cake. That's a Van Halen song.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So, all right. So we got that coming up. Next week. Eric, Colin, thank you guys for joining us. We'll take a look at the box office and do movie reviews again next week. Okay.
Sounds good.
All right, you guys, take care. There's Colin, there's Eric, and they review the movies with me every week right here on WGN on Monday mornings. All right, more coming up right here on 720 WGN.